What is up, everyone? Thanks for joining us for this special segment of the Game Cast. As always, I'm your host, Kenny. Well, one of your hosts, and with me is Tess.
Hello, everyone.
And today we have a special guest to talk about something that's been rather controversial in the gaming sphere, if you will. If you've been living under a rock, you might not know what's going on, but all of us in the gaming, whether you're a journalism, on the journalism side, content creator, or if you're on, game development, you've heard of the game 6 Days in Fallujah. I believe I said that right. I think so. I sorry if I didn't. I'm not trying to offend anyone, but I've only been reading the name. I haven't been actually saying it out loud for however long, because COVID, I haven't been seeing people, so I've been just reading it. Anywho, we wanted to kind of talk about it with our special guest because the dialogue has been centered on, I guess, a US or American perspective, especially when it comes to the, I guess, the higher thrones of journalism. It's been, usually white males, or in IGN's case, basically a lot of white people kind of writing about what's been going on, right? And they've been interviewing the developers of the game and not really speaking to, people of, Iraqi descent or Arab people, or people who would represent the civilians in that area when the battle kind of took place, or the second battle took place. And so we wanted to get Rami on with us, Rami Ismail, to kind of talk and share his side, because there's been, like I said, it's been us mostly. It's from the US perspective, and I think that has led to a lot of the controversy, but not in the way that you would think. Really, what's happening, and I feel like I'm doing it myself, so I'm gonna let him speak in a second. But really, what's been happening in a sense that because we've been showing everything from our perspective, it kind of makes us, or creates us as the hero, right? Like, we look like the good guys going into a foreign country and doing heroic things, right? And that's actually not what happened. There's a lot from, the use of white phosphorus, the kicking people civilians' doors, and not letting people leave when they tried to leave, things of that nature. Like, we did a lot of bad stuff, is what I'm getting at. And so having a video game that kind of paints this picture that we're the good guys and we've only done good things is pretty piss poor, in our opinion. And so, without further ado, let's introduce our guests. Rami, how's it going?
I'm good. I'm good. Thank you so much for having me.
Thanks for taking the time to chat with us. And we follow each other on Twitter, and I've been kind of watching from the sidelines. Because I didn't want to, outside of me saying that the game was kind of trash, just my thoughts, I didn't want to really chime in too much. I kind of wanted to see what other people who are a little bit closer to the events did, what they had to say. One of the things I wanted to ask you, though, was what were your initial thoughts when, I know, because, the game came out, or the game was introduced or talked about years ago, and then it got canceled by Konami, and then it kind of resurfaced now. Like, what was your initial thoughts when it kind of came back?
It was strange. The first time 6 Days in Fallujah was a topic was actually as I was joining the games industry. I started my indie career in 2010. Before that, I was an indie, and in 2009, the first cancellation of 6 Days of Fallujah happened over concerns from the U.S. veterans that were whose stories were to be told in that game. Games have come a long way in that, something like this now in the U.S. doesn't get canceled over considerations of, like, can a game properly talk about difficult subjects, right? Because we've proven that. We've proven that with games like This War of Mine, or Spec Ops: The Line, where games can take critical or different perspectives to war in games than just, like, hey, isn't it fun to shoot people? right. as sort of like the theme. So I think that discussion has sort of evaporated. The part that hasn't evaporated is that in games, Muslims and Arabs and brown folks in the Middle East are still seen as expandable, like trophies for violence, right? It's been, my feelings are we've come a long way, and also nothing has changed at all, which is a very mixed bag of feelings, I will say.
Yeah, definitely, definitely.
I agree.
Yeah, it's I will say it's interesting. Like the new game, the new version of 6 Days in Fallujah. It's strange. It almost feels like we stepped into a time machine to the time where this was still acceptable, right? Where we go back to, okay, well, like, let's just make a game that's straight up American war propaganda. The first game, mm-hmm. if I understand properly, was actually funded by U.S. military, or the people working on it were funded by whether it was like some sort of agency in the U.S. or military. I'm not entirely clear on. This time, it's not mm-hmm. being developed that way, from what I understand. The reportedly, there is no government involvement in this one, but it definitely kept the propaganda smell and flavor to it.
Right,
like it's a game about how the U.S. did really good things in Iraq, right? How they saved the people there. I mean, the reality was very different, right?
Right.
The war in Iraq was not a response to anything. It was an invasion of a sovereign country that had really not done anything against the U.S. whatsoever. There was no threat. There was no... there was no act of aggression. It was not like in Afghanistan where the action was a response to the events of 9/11. And even though you could, you know, call the war in Afghanistan a super severe overreaction for the events of 9/11, there was at least an inciting incident, right? You could say, like, okay, the U.S. was defending itself in its very explosive way. But the Iraq war was literally U.S. government told everybody that there were weapons of mass destruction in Iraq and just said, well, we're going to invade them. I don't know. I grew up Arab, right? Like I grew up as a Dutch Egyptian. I wasn't raised with one culture. I was raised with two cultures. And one of the benefits of being raised with two cultures is you get to see the news from two sides, right?
Right. Right.
You watch the news in Dutch. As I grew older, I watched news in English and I watched news in Arabic. The thing you realize is the news ain't the same, right? The stories the one side tells, very different from the stories the other side tells. Wow. Thanks, fam. but yeah. Oh, because I said Google, right? Okay, thanks. Thanks, fam.
Alexa.
Yeah. But yeah, the news ain't the same, right? And I was always kind of shocked by that, because you kind of feel like news ain't supposed to be objective, right? It's supposed to be true. It's supposed to be facts. And I realized that really quickly, that the way you choose to tell facts matters a lot, right? It changes everything. Because you can report on the same thing in 6 different ways. You can report on the same statistics in 10 different ways. You can report the same story so many different ways, and each of them carry a narrative, a story that you're telling, a sort of story that you want to communicate. And the first thing I learned about the difference in news between the West and the Arab world is that the Arabs considered the Arabs human, and the West, it just doesn't, right? We are proxy countries with probably maybe some people, but U.S. military doesn't even register U.S. civilian deaths, right? It doesn't count them. They're counted as collateral, if they're counted at all. So we don't even know how many people have died in these wars, because nobody tracks it. We don't know how many like misfires have happened. We don't know how many innocent people have died. We don't know how many journalists have been killed. We don't know how often families have been torn apart. We just genuinely have no idea. The best we have is comparisons of death numbers from the years before compared to the years of the war, but it's hard to say what killed those people, right? So for me, it was always very strange to just kind of see this very statistical, this very sterile view of deaths in the Arab world. Like, we were always a number, and then they trot out like some US analyst that would tell us about like whether these numbers are bad. And it's like, no, those are human people that are dead.
Right, exactly. Because
a foreign country invaded their country and drone bombed them for so long that the kids are scared of clear skies because it makes houses easier to target. Right. But somehow that was always like, it's kept one step away. Right? It's always abstract. It's always turned into this sort of like the system. It just, you know, these people go through the machine and they come out dead, but freedom. Right?
Right.
So for me, seeing 6 days in Fallujah again, the first time I saw it, I was so hopeful. I was hopeful. Because you telling me that some people are going to make a game that covers the second siege of Fallujah, right? And they say they're going to do it like a documentary. And they say they're going to tell the real story. And they say that you're going to feel like you were there. And part of me is just like, great, let's show it. Let's show the truth of Fallujah. Because the truth of Fallujah, especially the second siege of Fallujah, but both sieges, honestly, were awful events. They're not good events. They're not heroic events. They're not things to celebrate. Even the veterans that fought that war say that everything was wrong about what happened there. That it was, in many ways, it was a manhunt for one person, right? That was the goal. They were trying to find, this one guy that was a, that was sort of like a leading figure in this growing group of extremists in the region that had gained power after the U.S. destabilized the nation a few years in the years preceding that, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, and they besieged the city for that, right? And Fallujah has the incredible context, right? It's this if you would think of it, if you think of like the big cities, the historical cities that would repel every siege. Right, Fallujah is one of those. To the Iraqis, it has a meaning. It has the elder people do not give up the city of Fallujah because that was its history. It withstood the sieges. So thinking of a game that would show all that, right? The meaning of the city, the fear the people must have had, the growth of extremism in the region and the reasons for it, and the perspective of the soldiers that were sent into this war as they were lied to by their own government, that they were fighting to stop a dangerous government or a hostile government from using weapons of mass destruction. If you put all that together, God, that sounds like a worthwhile game.
Right.
Right.
I want to play that. I want to see that. I want to believe in that. I want to believe that games can do something like that. I became a game developer because I believe that games will put you in somebody else's shoes and allow you to feel what they feel, right? And it's not perfect. Of course, it's not perfect. But you play Papers, Please. You go in as a non-corrupt person and you come out corrupt no matter what you do, right?
Right, right.
That's what the game teaches you, is that sometimes good people do bad things to help people they love, right? And that, yeah, you can refuse that, but is that right? Is that wrong? Or is the system just messed up, right? So with 6 days in Fallujah, I was so hopeful. I was so hopeful. And then I started reading the first interview, right, with Peter Tamte, who is the CEO of the company, I think. And every hope I had fell apart so fast.
Yeah, that was rough. That was rough.
It was so rough because you think of all this, you think of like the groups that were there. It's not just the civilians, right? It's not just the army. It's also the insurgents, but it's also a resistance, right? A real resistance that is just there protecting their city. You know how often I've played a U.S. soldier protecting a U.S. city or a suburb from foreign invaders? I've defended it from the Russians. I've defended it from the Koreans. I've defended it from South Americans. I've defended it from all sorts of people in video games. So why don't I get to play the people that were fighting for Fallujah just because they thought Americans shouldn't be in that city, right?
Right.
And then the interview started, and it's like, no, we want people to empathize with the soldiers. With the U.S. soldiers. We want people to feel the fear that those people felt going house to house, innocent people's houses, kicking in the door and terrifying people for life, shooting people if, you know, they were scared or shocked or deemed a threat, or sending them out into the street in a war zone, right? But they wanted to talk to us not about the people behind the door. They wanted to talk to us about the people who opened the door. Right. That's the only story they wanted to tell. They only wanted to tell the story of the soldiers. And then even those stories were selective because they only want to talk about soldiers that did good.
Well, before we go there, because I had some questions with that, too. And I know what you're getting at, because that's the most recent game trailer had that. I believe it was featured on IGN, where it had the gameplay. We finally saw like in action gameplay. And that was rough. That was rough for multiple reasons. But before we get there, though, one of the things that I did want to talk about, and that kind of pertains to this, was how our media has been covering this game. Because I know, like IGN, for instance, they did a article that did interview some Iraqi civilians and developers about their thoughts on the game. And it was, from what I've read, was pretty well received. And then right after that, we have, you know, the exclusive, you know what I mean? And so that sent people all sorts of, you know.
That was rough. Like the thing you have to understand is for us as Arabs, our voice, not counting, is the most, it's like we wake up that way. We wake up that way without no voice. We go to bed without a voice, right?
I feel you.
Even in the big pantheon, of everything that's happening across the world, in terms of like talking about diversity, talking about inclusivity, there's never been a word said about the Arabs in the Middle East, right? We're not human. We're not counted as human. And a large part of that is because we are structurally excluded from every conversation, right? Like I said earlier, in the news, it's not Iraqis that talk about the harm done in Iraq. It's analysts, it's historians, it's people in New York, people in San Francisco, people in Washington telling us about how the war is going, what progress is. And they sit at the big table with the big TV anchors and they talk about like, well, you know, the accuracy of our drones has improved tremendously. So, you know, the cost of the human cost of life is much lower than it used to be. And I'm like, you're talking about people dying.
Right, exactly.
Like, it not being as many is still not good enough. It should be zero. Like, nobody innocent should die in this situation, especially not if you're in that country over a lie. Like, zero is the only acceptable amount. And anything more than that is nonsense. It's unacceptable. And then not having any of those people speak, because that would humanize them. And if you humanize them, you lose the war, right? If you humanize the people that you're bombing, you can't continue fighting that war. We're used to that. But I've been in the games industry for 10 years, right? And I love the people in the press. Like, I think they genuinely do incredible work. I think they're hardworking. It's a thankless job. They spend so much time creating all of this content, creating all of this perspective. And I find that the games press in general has a very strong ethical system of trying to keep keep game coverage fair, right? And I know there's discussions about this. I know there's arguments about this, but I think that when it comes to dealing with a lot of the weirdness of the games industry, this big money business, that the games press is genuinely, I do not know of any story of like bribery or any story of like, you know, like it's just not how the industry works. If it worked that way, I would hear of it. Right. I would know of it because it will be it will be a scandal all over. It'll be a
big story. Yeah.
Right. But what the games press doesn't know is how to deal with real life issues. And the reason they don't know that is because they normally don't get asked to deal with that stuff. Right. And so over the years, they've messed up on every single one. Right. They've messed up first when it was about women. They've messed up when it was about racial issues. They've messed up when it was about sexuality. They've messed up when it was about, you know, gender. And, you know, they've messed up now when it is about Arabs. Because the thing they do is they have the people that aren't those people write about how bad things are. And the honest truth is most U.S. people are not equipped to talk about the reality of being Arab, right? They don't, there's no frame of reference. There's not even a frame of reference of how to talk about speaking primarily a language that when seen on TV is mostly related to terrorism. That's the only time I see my language on TV. It's not to talk about the good stuff that happens in the Middle East. The only time I see my language on TV so it's about some guys to yell Allahu Akbar in some sort of homeland series and then get shot in the face. Like that's the only time I see my people on TV.
I agree. I will interject a little bit. And this is just coming from the journalistic side of there's a problem with getting the right voices out. A lot of it has to do with not hiring or not even freelancing, allowing the people who could have a voice actually speak in these areas. And even when they do come up, in my case, I'll speak for me, talking about anything that has to do with Black Lives Matter, there's extreme pushback. A lot of what we get is that, you know, it's not the right audience, or it's not, you know what I mean? And so sometimes we'll have the right mindset or the right, you know, we want to do the right thing. And the people who are in the controlling, you know, whether it's the editor-in-chief or whether it's the people above them even, is like, you know what, let's pump the brakes on this particular article. I even had some of my colleagues have their articles altered to say something else. So I do want to give them, you know, some of them, you know, us a little bit of credit in that sense. But we do get a ton of, you know, a ton of pushback when we try to have those conversations.
For sure. And I respect that. But on the other side, people are dying. Right.
Of course.
So for me, that can't be a reason to do that. Like, here's the thing. One of the things I heard after that happened. So first, when this story broke, the way the story broke was traitors. The way the story broke was the trailer of 6 days in Fallujah and interviews with Peter Tamt. And the people that interviewed Peter Tamt, they did good work. Right. Within those constraints that you mentioned, Charlie Hall at Polygon, most of the people that interviewed him, they all fell in the same trap, which is U.S. people talking to U.S. people about Iraqi deaths, right? About Arab deaths, which is not acceptable. Within that constraint, they did well, right? But here's the thing. That should not be without Arab or Iraqi voices. And then people say, like, well, we don't have Iraqis in our network. We don't have Arabs in our network. The people from Iraq, the Arab people don't want to speak because if they speak, they might lose their visa, they might lose their opportunities, they might be branded terrorists, they might be branded terrorist sympathizers. They don't trust the press because for all of their life, they've only seen the press treat them as disposable. So it's really hard to source people that want to talk about that. And I respect that.
Right.
I respect that. I appreciate that because I'm a person for a lot of the press who has acted as a switchboard between the press and Arab people for a long time. The Arab developers, they trust me. The press, they trust me. I can vouch for both of them on both sides, right? So I've acted as a switchboard. I know this is hard. But for me, the thing where it becomes a problem is that if you say, okay, this is hard, I agree. But hard is not impossible. Hard means you can do it if you put in the work. So if you run the words of the white dude that fully supports bombing the crap out of a country and then decides to make a propaganda game about it. If you take his words and you print those without doing the work of getting our words in the same article, then that's a problem to me.
Oh, yes.
Because the way this should have been handled is you do the interview with Peter Tamtu, and then you sit on that article until you get those other voices in. And then you post it. And I understand money is an issue. I understand clicks are an issue. And I understand that everybody wants to be the first to break the news. But people are dying. And people are dying because we keep getting dehumanized. Because we don't get to speak. Because we don't get to be part of the conversation. Because we get to watch on TV how after our people die in such numbers that they have to turn the soccer stadium into a cemetery, right? After our people die from the effects of colonialism, after our people die from the effects of war, after the people die from effective invasions, we get to watch as they make games about how sad it made their soldiers. Right?
Yeah.
That should not be a one-sided conversation. That should be a conversation that we at least need. We deserve the microphone. If even just for once, right? So for me, that's where it hurt. Because I love these people. I love these people in the press doing so much work and like taking these risks, talking about these complicated issues, right? Talking about these things that hurt and getting, like, let's be honest, getting so much flack for it. Every time a journalist like takes the stand on something like this, the world turns on them, right? So I want to support them. I want to say like, good, like, thank you for bringing this up. But it can't be the same tradition. It can't be the same thing. A U.S. person talked to a U.S. person about how we die somewhere else, right? And then discussing among themselves if it is handled well. Well, is this a moral way of just, like, showing the destruction of this foreign city that neither of us have ever been? Well, let us have a discussion about that. That's not good enough.
Do you believe that will happen, though? Do you believe that a voice will be given? Do you believe that there's a path forward?
I mean, so we've seen there are a number of people who have that power, right? And IGN is actually one of the platforms that do. They have they generally have incredible leadership, right? Rebecca Valentine, who wrote that article interviewing these Arab, Lebanese, Iraqi developers, she did an incredible job. She's such a thorough, such a precise, such a diligent journalist. And it really like shows from that article. And as it was being written, I heard from some of the people that were speaking on that of how it was shaping up. And it exceeded all of my expectations, right? It was such a good article.
Solid.
But then the commercial side of things kick in again. And it's clear that in the end, it's about money, right? Like the ads got sold. An hour and a half of interview with three literal white dudes talking about destruction of brown people. Just kind of laughing about how similar it is about Halo. Like I've never wanted to punch a screen as much as I wanted to punch a screen at that point. Like I'm generally not an angry person, but the 6 day in Fallujah thing has gotten me pretty angry several times. Watching that interview was heartbreaking. Like, it's like I went back like 20 years in time, sitting there as a kid watching the announcement of this war against my people, because around the world, a bunch of people that looked like me had done some really bad stuff. So I guess all of us were enemies of freedom now, right? It's scary. It's scary to see that that hasn't changed. That is just going on. And, you know, people in the U.S., like, U.S. politics are U.S. politics. A lot happens. But, like, honestly, in the Arab world, like, we don't care whether it's a red or blue government, like, bombing us, right? We really couldn't give a shit. Like, Biden has immediately gone back to bombing a lot of Arab places. And Trump did the same. Like, he didn't, like, start new wars, but he definitely didn't stop any. And he wrecked our lands in a lot of other ways, like sanctions, like visa blocks, travel bans, like just making sure that our economies can't grow. And then at the end of all that, every time, my dad told me this, my uncles told me this, grandparents told me this. At the end, when our countries are like rubble, the Western armies, they retreat. And as we rebuild in the middle of the rubble, conflict arises, power vacuums arise, like extremists take power. And then, you know, a new invasion happens because we are apparently barbaric savages is something that we get called a lot that can't get our stuff together. Right.
Heard that before.
Right. No, that's the thing. It's a very, it's like any person of color has probably heard that before. Right. Cause it's how white folks mostly can justify the idea of them solving our issues for us, right? Bringing enlightenment and freedom and opportunity to us. All they're really doing is killing, right? They're killing, they're taking the resources, they're taking the freedom, and then they leave again, and they pat themselves on the back, and they talk about how humane they were and how they brought opportunity and how the lives of those people are better now, for they have liberated them and they have enlightened them. And they have brought a better life. And in the meanwhile, you know, our countries are on fire. And for I guess all of us in our heritage, in our history, there is a country that is still on fire to this day from the results of those actions. And you know, bombs are still falling on Iraq. Still are. Guns are still being fired in Iraq. Nothing changed. Like, same thing, same story, different bombs, different hurt, different harm, still hurt, still evil.
Right.
And now we get to watch a game about how they were heroes and how things are better now. We get to watch how soldiers kick in a door and only shoot terrorists. Right, because no other thing has happened. We don't get to see how many people died from shelling random buildings because they couldn't tell who was in there. We don't get to see the destruction of a hotel full of journalists. We don't get to see white phosphorus used as a weapon, a thing that was so noted that the UK Parliament and the UK, like probably not even probably the biggest colonizers on Earth,
right,
by a large distance. They had a parliamentary inquiry about whether they should support the U.S. if they were going that far to use banned incendiary weapons. Like, I don't want to give the U.K. any credit for anything. like, absolutely not. Zero. But when the U.K. says, like, hey, you might be going too far against these non-white people, like, that's where you got to go, like, okay, listen, something is bad here. But that happened, that the UK went like, hey, maybe these firebombs, maybe it's a bit too much. Like, there's no discussion about these things. There's no discussion about these war crimes. They were discussed at every level of every government that was involved in this. But apparently the developers of 6 days in Fallujah couldn't find anybody that knew anything about this.
Conveniently.
Very odd. Just... very strange. I mean, everybody I've talked to from the city had stories about it. Mm-hmm. But the 26 Iraqis and every soldier they've talked to have just kind of said, like, well, don't really have any knowledge of that. So I guess it didn't happen. And it distracts from the game, apparently.
I see. That's like, rough because, like, okay, well, for instance, we know that the marketing has been horrible. Like, it's just
right. All
across the board with the mixed messages, contradictions. Even, you know, in the recent gameplay video showing what I assume would be part of the documentary segments. And it's mainly from the U.S. point of view where, you know, there's a line you mentioned when you were online where they're like, the first person who goes in is right.
He's never wrong.
That kicks in the door, that he's, that person's never wrong. So, and what that paints a picture of is that, no matter what he does, he was, you know, legitimate in what he did. You know, if he kills a civilian, well, he was, you know how they, you know, I can liken it to a police officer saying, you know, I was fearing for my life,
Absolutely.
even though he has the guns and all the power and several of his people with him, he was fearing for
Right.
his life, right? And so that was rough seeing that, even, you know, for me not being in that position, but the fact that I can liken it so easy was like, oh, this is trash, right? And so,
Right.
but then it's like, what that brings me to is like, do you think it's even possible for them to, or not possible, probable that they will ever show the other side in the documentary? Because that's what they keep harping on. Like, the documentary is going to show the white, or talk
Right.
about the white phosphorus, is going to talk about all these other
Right.
things and the political things and stuff. And you know what I mean? Like,
Right. No, here's the thing, right? When you play a video game, what's the stuff you remember?
The shooting, the explosions, the, you know,
the game.
Yeah,
right?
The gameplay.
So yeah, they can put some videos in there, right? And they might talk about some of that stuff. But the fact is that the way they talk about this game has changed over the past few weeks of backlash, right? And in the actual interview with IGN, which I watched for the full hour and 12 minutes that it went, because Ryan, who did the interview, said that if you want to critique it, you should watch the whole thing. I said, you know what? I don't agree. Fair enough. I'll watch the whole thing. And even the developers admit that they don't know yet. They don't know what's in there yet. They don't know what they're doing yet. They don't know what balance they have when it comes to telling US stories and telling Iraqi stories. The one thing they've said is that they want to tell the story in gameplay, which to me is the part of a game that matters, right? In gameplay, they want to tell the story of an Iraqi father escaping the city with a child. And that would be about 10% of the game, is what I understood, right? Which means that 90% of it is US soldiers like shooting terrorists, and 10% is this one magical civilian that came out of nowhere, and who is going to escape from the terrorists to the freedom and safety of the US soldiers. The reality of that situation is that any military man over the age of 12, I think it was 12, was actually turned back upon trying to flee the city. Any person that was of military age, whether you were a civilian, whether you were an extremist, whether you were resistance, no matter who you were, you got turned back because they couldn't tell who was a terrorist or not. So as the US Army approach to once again fight in Fallujah, right? A fight that they had really wrecked the city before and caused this growth of these extremist factions within the city. If you tried to flee, you were told to turn back and stay away from the windows because you would be safe. And then they shelled random buildings, and then they went door to door, and then they kicked in doors. So for me, telling that story is as insincere as telling no story at all, right? Because that story, sure, that might have happened, right? But that's not the feeling the people have. That's not the feeling that remains of that invasion. The feeling of that invasion is that the invasion should have never happened. So
right.
for
right.
me, they can absolutely include a video of white phosphorus.
Right.
And I would respect them a little bit more for it. But the fact that they build a roguelike, effectively a roguelike, procedurally generated war crime simulator 2021, and then go, well, you know, there's a video of some bad things we did. I don't know. Like, it's hard for me to go like, well, you know what? It's okay then. Like, they have scanned the US soldiers down to the pores. They have them talking about their children, the first birthday. They have them talking about their colleagues, the other soldiers that died. They went in 12, they came back 4. And complete with Back to the Future, like photo fades of these people disappearing from the photo. And all of those things are real. That happened. People died, right? People died because the government lied to them, because the government exploited the poor, exploited the weak, exploited the angry, pointed that hate at a country, said that it would destroy the United States with weapons that weren't real, then send them into hell, right? Send them into war. And the people in Iraq, they have it worse because they never had anything. They were just living their life. They were trying to have barbecue. And then this happened, right? Just army came in, no weapons of mass destruction throughout the government. Like, you look at photos of Fallujah before the war, it was a beautiful city. Much of Iraq was, you know, absolutely issues. It was a dictatorship. There were awful things going on in that country. But for the U.S. to lie and invade, that shouldn't happen. But here's the thing. So they have that level of detail on those soldiers.
Yeah.
Scanned down to the ports. They look identical. They sound identical. True stories verified. Made sure that it all checks out. And what the Iraqis get? Their houses get randomly generated. The city isn't actually the real city. The people, only evil people in the city. The people get placed into random spots in that city. The people don't even get to die in their own houses. The virtual representations of these people that died in real life, not even 20 years ago, are going to get teabagged by some asshole kid. I don't know if I can swear.
No, you're fine. Teabagged.
We do it all the time.
Okay. It's going to get teabagged by some asshole kid who's going to shoot them in not their houses. And they don't even get to be a real human. None of them are designed. The only one that gets designed is the hero one that proves that we were the good guys all along, right? That's it. That's the one Iraqi we get. It's like how U.S. war games tend to have that thing where two-thirds into the game, Call of Duty, I don't know, Medal of Honor, whatever, two-thirds along the game, they fire off a nuke. The bad guys fire off a nuke because now it's okay that you shot these 400 people in the 4 hours up to because they were going to, come on, that's a nuke. Nukes are bad, right? It's the same thing. We're going to shoot a lot of people and then we're going to justify it by going like, but look at this poor Iraqi person. Look at them. Don't they deserve freedom? Don't they deserve our way of life? We saved them from all these bad people. We're just not going to show anything else because that would be a bit of a distraction from the story, right? It would be a bit of the distraction from nobody wants to play an Iraqi citizen. Isn't that like an actual quote from Peter Tamti? It would be boring to play. Has this man played this War of Mine? It was kind of a big deal.
It was, I reviewed it, when it came out, or, you know, I got review code before it came out, and yeah, this War of Mine was amazing, to say the least, and just in terms of showing you the results of war, like what happens to those countries and those people who have to be there, you know, until aid comes or whatever, you know, struggling. I actually would have like this to be more of that,
to be honest. The thing that gets me is that I believe, so I've traveled the world for 10 years, right? I'm a game developer, but behind the scenes, the thing I've done for the past 10 years is I've gone all around the world, met developers everywhere. I've connected them to other developers. I've tried to help out. I've tried to help build community. I've given talks. I've gone to universities, negotiated with governments to make sure that game development in every country around the world, whether that's in Latin America, or it's in Central America, whether it's in Eastern Europe, Southern Europe, Africa, Asia, any part in the world, I believe there's game developers everywhere because there's gamers everywhere, right? And I believe that games are the most international language in the world, more than English. Like you put, and I mean games, I mean play, not just video games, all games, right? You bring a ball, you put it on the ground anywhere in the world and you kick it at somebody, they're going to kick it back. You have a baseball, you throw it at anybody in the world, they're going to catch it. They're going to throw it back at you. That's the power of video games, right? We are an extension of play. And play is older than anything. It's older than music. It's older than language. We created music by play, by just, isn't it cool if I hit this stick against this tree? Well, that sounds good. Let's do it again, right? Climbing a tree meant we survived the predators. Throwing a thing at a tree meant we could throw, we could hunt, right? The people that were playful survived. It evolved into us. We are playful creatures. Humanity is playful. So we have this international language. And my mission has been over the past 10 years to make sure that everybody can speak that language, that everybody has the right to speak that language, to make sure that everybody has access to speak that language. And the thing I learned is that games are a reflection of the people that make them, right? Of the cultures that make them. And the thing I've realized is that when U.S. folks, with all of the diversity issues they have, usually these white dudes, make a game about war, they make a game about winning wars. That's the game they care about. They care about going in, shooting things, then going back home to Hero. Because that's the story they like, right? They like the story of invading a place. They like the story of, like, capturing a thing. They like the story. Spec Ops? Spec Ops the Line, one of the greatest war games in the history of video games, is German. A country that has learned through shame and history the devastating effects of war and the devastating effect of being an aggressor in war. And the game they make is about the devastating effect of being an aggressor in a war. That's what Spec Ops is about the harm it does to people, about the harm it does to your own people when you go and become the aggressor in a conflict. Because that's what the Germans think about war, right? When a German makes a game about war, that's what they make. And for this war of mine, that game is Polish. A country that has known war mostly because they were invaded.
Right?
A country that in the region has seen war destroy cities, destroy lives, that knows that story, right? So for me, my hope is that the issues with diversity in the US, that they evolve to a point where we have different leadership on games like this, right? Because if there's one thing that I have to give the US every time, is that the US is ahead on any discussion about diversity compared to any country in the world, because it is the most diverse country in the world. Not for the right reasons always.
Right? Totally.
But it is. And in the US, those discussions happen. I'm Dutch, right? In the Netherlands, if you would see the state of racial equality, you would like, it is heartbreaking. And we don't have the issues, we don't have as much of the issues with policing or cops. Things here are different, and in some ways they are better. But we are completely incapable of talking about this stuff. Because we can look at things and then point at the US and be like, well, it's not as bad as over there, right? We're doing quite well. Like, that's literally our white people. That's literally the thing. They just point at the US and they go like, well, but nobody's getting shot here, right? So aren't we good then? And it's like, no, you're like, if you would look up the issues related to race in the Netherlands, you'd probably look at it and you'd go like, oh my God, like, what are you, like the 1940s? Like, are you in the 1940s? Is this genuinely like, are we really doing this? Like, the United Nations had to call us out and be like, you're a bit racist. Like, this is a real issue. But the fact that those discussions are happening, the fact that those discussions are globalized through English, through sort of like the media of the US, that makes me hopeful. Mm-hmm. The flip side is that as long as those things aren't resolved, as long as the same people hold the power, the same people make the games, that actually affects everybody globally, right? Because if something goes wrong in the US, it fucks everybody everywhere.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because English will export it. The whole situation with this conspiracy theories, the anti-vaxxing stuff, like all of that that's happening in the US right now, that exported here, straight up, like the same thing. Same, like, we have Pizzagate believers. Like, how did that happen? That's across the ocean from us. We don't even have, like, I don't even know what pizzeria it was. We don't have the. How did that happen? But it's English, right? English right. exported it over the ocean. Facebook exported it over the ocean. Twitter exported it.
Facebook.
Right. Oh, no. Yeah. All of this is real problems. But that's the thing, right? Like, if this gets fixed in the US, it gets fixed on a global scale, right? Because in the end, as it is now, media is still the US export, right? Mm-hmm. Popular media still is. I would much prefer for an Iraqi to tell their game. But I also know from having worked with Iraqi developers that the chances they have at releasing a game are incredibly minor, right? Between just getting a dev kit, right, from a Sony or a Microsoft or a Nintendo, most of those companies don't even have an office in the region, right? If they want to get the gear to make those video games, they're going to have to find some way to convince somebody in Europe or the US or whoever to get that device and then ship it over, which is illegal, by the way. That's against the rules. You can't just ship dev kits. Like, that's not how that works. If they want to release a game on Steam, If you're in Iran, one of the countries with some of the most talented developers I've seen in my life, you don't get to earn money. You're not allowed to. Like, you're literally not allowed to earn money, because if Steam did business with an Iranian developer, they would get sanctions, right? They would stop being allowed to do business in the United States. If I want to do business with an Iranian developer, I stop being allowed to do business in the United States, because I would be treating, I would be breaking the sanctions, right? So I don't believe that anytime soon these conditions that have been created around the world, this dehumanization of the Iraqi people, of the Arab people, of the Muslim people, that that's going anywhere, right? Because those are these big cultural changes that only happen when the culture shifts, right? The culture needs to shift from the creators. It needs to shift in the voices that are heard. It needs to shift in the people that get to speak. It has to shift in the Americans that get to speak, the Iraqi Americans that get to speak, right? The Arab Americans that get to speak, the Muslim Americans that get to speak. Because all the other ones of us are speaking in different languages and nobody cares. Nobody cares about us arguing in Arabic about whether we're getting bombed or not, because nobody can read it. We're the only ones that can read it. In the Netherlands, we can argue about this stuff all day long, but it's in Dutch. There's 15 million people on the planet that understand this. And if we want to do it in another language, we better make sure we get that language right. Right? Imagine having to argue about diversity in Arabic. Imagine having to argue about representation in Arabic. Imagine having to talk about getting your voices heard in Arabic and you don't know Arabic. That's the reality for the majority of the world right now. They stare at these things and they want to speak, but they can't speak because they don't understand the language. They don't understand the discussion. They don't understand the culture of the United States. They don't understand the situation in the United States. All they know is they're getting bombed. And please, please, please stop bombing us, right? But how do you say that to the people bombing you? He's going like, hey, folks, can you just please, like, you know, I know we don't understand. We speak different languages, but can you just, khalas, like, basmah. Hello.
Hey, that I understood.
Right. So,
90-day fiance. Okay, I can learn some words.
Nice. Khalas is one of the best Arabic words, to be honest. Like, it's so good. It's so good. So good. But when leadership doesn't, beautiful word.
Speaker, by the way.
Sorry. Yeah. But yeah, as long as leadership doesn't change, as long as the people in power don't change, there's no hope for us. There's no hope for us in getting this right. There's no hope for us in our country getting, you know, the bomb stopping, because right now the same bombs, different color, they're now blue instead of red. They're still falling. People are still dying. The game is still coming out. Still going to be propaganda. Still going to be discussion about bombing the next place. We're going to be bombing Syria. We're going to be bombing Yemen. We're going to be bombing Iraq. We're still going to be rough on Iran, even though, you know, we broke our own treaty with them. Like, we're still going to be rough on all of these places because they are not human. There are these proxy locations for wars from the past. There's this proxy location for the war against the Soviets. It's a proxy location for the war against China. It's the proxy location for the war against Russia. We are the board, right? Yeah. We're the board, and when a piece gets taken from the board, there's explosions, and that's what's happening. That's what's happening in Yemen, right? Like, the U.S. is trying to protect some of its alliances, and the Russians are trying to protect some of its interests. This is what's happening in Syria. It's what's happening in all these places. We're just kind of dying, you know. We're there, and now we get to play it in a video game. Like, it's gonna be great. We're gonna just, like, straight up first person. Gonna shoot into some windows, kill some of those good Arabs, because they're very bad. They didn't even have a word of Arabic in that entire. Can you believe it? Not a single word of our language. Zero.
I'm offended. I'm actually offended by that. Kenny knows me. I'm the type of person. I'm like, wait. Why is Mulan in English? Like, right. I'm that
person. Right. What is happening? Like, that's you're gonna make a game in Fallujah and somehow just, like, nobody speaks. There's just no words, no stores, no signs, no anything. No, it's just like, it's kind of, I mean, it's randomly generated. What do you, like, of course you're not going to get a good city out of that. But, like, no Arabic? I keep a website, and a friend keeps a, two people keep a website, separate websites about bad Arabic in media, right? My friend runs notarabic.com, which is all examples of things that are supposed to be Arabic but are not Arabic. And I run isthatarabic.com, where I explain in three simple steps how you cannot be a total like asshole trying to render Arabic in your media, which everybody, Coca-Cola gets it wrong. Pepsi, like, these are not small company. Marvel gets it wrong. Like, I'm just like, y'all couldn't hire a single Arab. Just go like, that's not Arabic. Like a three-year-old could look at some of these and be like, nah. Somehow, they don't. But like, to avoid the issue of doing bad Arabic by just having no Arabic, that's somehow worse. I don't know how they did it worse. Like that is so much more offensive. These people are dying in like the most sterile version of their city in these video games. And then being told that their murderers are the heroes. So some US dude with a like just no respect for our lives can make some money.
Yeah.
He's gonna make some money off of this game.
Yeah, and that's actually part of the next question, because first of all, that's not okay. Somebody's going to sit there and make money off of everything that you just explained, which is horrible. Everything that you just said, I mean, dehumanization of individuals who are murdered, factual people, and a factual city that is basically randomly generated in a computer simulation, all of it is just wrong. And so the fact that somebody is going to make thousands upon thousands, possibly millions of dollars is wrong. So that being said, do you think this game should be canned?
I mean, I do. I think that there. So here's the thing. For me, the problem isn't that it's a game. I don't care that it's a game. Could have been a book, could have been a movie, could have been anything. Yeah. I think historical revisionism of war crimes should be illegal. That's it. That's my entire opinion on this. If you are going to take historical events that have murdered innocent people and you're going to present those as anything else than what they were, intentionally, with full knowledge of what you're doing and for profit, that should be illegal. I think that should not be allowed.
So what would you say then? I mean, because there's a lot of pushback, I know, online and in, you know, in certain articles I'm not going to mention because, but in the idea that in terms of censoring art, for instance, in certain aspects, I share your opinion because a lot of harm has come from, you know, films depicting slavery, depicting, you know, they romanticize it and make it seem like, you know, we were Neanderthals or we were whatever to kind of make people feel okay about what went down. You know, I think it's Dances with Wolves or whatever, and a bunch of other films that does this, right? And so, or The Birth of Our Nation, to where the point where I'm like, this has done so much harm years later that it shouldn't have come out. At the same time, I can understand the argument of this being someone's art, for us to critique, for us to say that it's bad, for us to show that this shouldn't happen anymore and learn from what happened being released. And so I know a lot of people kind of stand on that side, and I'm not talking about the trolls. I know there's a lot of people who are like, you know, that sort of thing. But in terms of, because in their argument would be it's a slippery slope to who's allowed to make whatever. You know what I mean?
Right.
What are your thoughts on that?
Well, I mean, I think it's a proven slippery slope that if people glorify war crimes, that war crimes happen.
Right.
That's a proven, that's not even a slippery slope. We're at the bottom of that slope. That has happened for the past decades. It has happened to all sorts of minorities. Right. Like this, we know where this slope went and we know where it leads. Like, do I believe in censorship of art? Not necessarily. I don't think we should censor art. But I also think that we have to understand that games are not just art. One of the most complicated things about being a game developer isn't the art part of it. It's the part where you have to marry that art with business, right? This game is not art. I can tell you this game is not art because I've played this exact game 60, 70 times in my life. I play a US soldier going into a foreign country and shoot a shit ton of people to bring liberty and freedom.
Right.
Right. I have played this game. I've played this game with the strategic command. I've played Binary Domain in like 2003 that had that exact same like go here, do things system. Like nothing here is new. The thing they've done is this, they've added some video to it to justify the way they tell that story. Here's the thing. If that was art and it was presented as such, it was presented as art. Okay. I still think it's awful. I still think it's shit. Okay. Sure. Like, go for it. But it's not. This is a commercial product that's being intentionally marketed as the true representation of what happened there. It's being marketed as a historical product with interviews, with conversations. But they don't say that those interviews are filtered. They don't say that those interviews are picked. They don't say that those interviews are picked in such a way that the UK Parliament knows more about this situation than the people that they interview. That is not sincere. That's not genuine. Here's the thing. The thing about the slippery slope argument that always gets me is that a slippery slope doesn't mean we end up at the bottom. That's not what that means. Right. It means that it can escalate. It can escalate, right? So if you start censoring art, it can escalate. And when things like that escalate, they always end up hurting us as minorities, right? Because our speech will be the first that gets taken. And our right to, if we even have that right at this point, right? Because a lot of Arabs ain't speaking about this because they will never get a visa. If you're in the games industry and you get asked about your opinion on 6 days in Fallujah, you better not give your opinion on 6 days in Fallujah because you will never go to GDC. You will never go to E3. You'll never go to PAX because they will check your phone when you enter the country and they will find that stuff on your Twitter. They will find that stuff. They will find your name on IGN. And they'll go like, oh, yeah, a bit of a risk, huh? And that's it. You're done. Most of the Arabs don't even get to go to the US if they don't do stuff like that.
Right.
Let alone if they do say stuff like that. So nobody's gonna do that. Everybody who spoke up in that IGN article is a hero in my book. Because they risked every bit of their career speaking up, right? Even the people that spoke anonymously, because I don't know what the US government can do, but I'm pretty sure they can check my email. And I'm pretty sure I have no rights. I have zero constitutional rights because I'm not a U.S. citizen. And even the people that should have U.S. constitutional rights get those rights violated all the time, as long as they're a minority. So
right, yep.
They've definitely read my email. Like, let's be honest, but like, they're probably listening to this conversation right now. Like,
at least it's Alexa than they are.
Right. For me, the slippery slope argument becomes a little complicated because if the slippery slope is, should we censor art? Then no. But if the slippery slope is war crime revisionism for money is wrong, then I am A-okay with that slippery slope going all the way down, right? Like, war crimes are bad. I think we can all agree on that.
Right.
Revising those and telling a different story than what actually happened is bad. And making money off of that because it leads to the actual death of people is bad. I'm okay with that. I'm very okay with that. And here's the thing. Yeah, there will be this discussion. Of course, we'll talk about it. We'll talk about how it's bad. I've had this discussion. Yeah. I've had this discussion in 2009. I've had this discussion in 2010. I gave a talk at GDC, the Game Developers Conference, the largest game developer conference in the world, in 2015 with a bunch of others about how maybe we should stop shooting Arabs in video games. And then somebody else gave that talk in 2016 about how we should maybe stop shooting Arabs in video games. They even came up with a name for the fictional Arab country that all of these wars happen in because people realized that maybe it's not cool to do this in real countries. So just put it in, we call it Arabistan. It's not a real country, just sort of like this mix of like kind of Middle Eastern sandy houses. You've seen the thing.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. I've had this conversation 100 times. I know where this slippery slope goes, right? It goes to the Iraq war. It goes to the war in Syria. It goes to the war in Yemen. It goes to people dying by the hundreds, by the thousands. By the best estimates we have, and they're inaccurate, between 250 and a million innocent people have died in wars in the Middle East from US-only violence. Not US and UK, not coalition violence. 250,000 people. That is enough that when I try to make a Twitter bot that would tweet for every interval of time that a people would die on average between now and 2001, it was too frequent for me to want to start that bot, because it will be tweeting every few minutes during the recording of this podcast. Right, statistically, from 2001 till now, 7, 8, 9 people have died. From now all the way back to 2001, that many people have died. We hear nothing of it, right? We hear the conversations about how good the airplanes are, how good the bombs have gotten, how trained the soldiers are, how stable the location. I don't know, like, I obviously don't follow news in the U.S. because I'm not in the U.S., but, like, was there ever any mention of the fact that Iraq tried to eject the U.S. forces from Iraq?
I think so, but since it was so long ago, I don't remember, and that might be your point.
Right. The Iraq trying to eject the U.S. forces was last year. They tried again. It was after Trump bombed the Iranian general out of nowhere.
That's right. That's right. I do remember that.
Which is definitely an act of war against a country that the U.S. is not at war with. And the only reason World War III didn't happen is because Iran was smart enough not to fire back, which when the Iranian government has to be the smart one, and it's like, I don't know what is happening. Like, the Iranian government is not really good people in that regard. Then Iraq just went like, that is a neighboring country. You killed the general of a neighboring country out of nowhere. We want y'all out. They voted on that. They passed a resolution. And the U.S. government went like, yeah, no. That's cool. Democracy sounds great, but yeah, you don't got that. That's a year.
Oh, I'm sorry. Not to cut you off, but that has always been fascinating to me anyways, with the idea that we can kind of station our troops in other countries and not the same. You know what I mean? Like, it's that's fascinating that's a thing that happens.
Right. I mean, for a lot of people, it's because the situation, and usually U.S. involvement in the situation around them has made the land so unstable that having an army that can shoot bad things is relatively good. It's a really effective way of marketing your services, is just making sure that shit is so shit that you need people who are really good at dealing with shit.
Right.
like, that's some, like, in terms of business, like, this is some business. Like, somebody is real smart about creating this business.
Selling sand at a beach type thing.
Right, but, right.
Because, you know, water's coming in, it's going to knock down your sandcastle, so I'm going to sell you the sand that's right next to your sandcastle.
Right. But I think for me, that's kind of the wild thing, is that a lot of this is kind of like, it evaporates. I remember Iran shut down a passenger airline last year, right? It was a big deal. Got shot out of the air by anti-air defenses. And the U.S. government went, this is unacceptable. Not mentioning that two or three decades ago, they did the same thing with an Iranian airliner. And then when asked to apologize, I think the U.S. president said, I don't apologize. I'm not the kind of person that apologizes for the United States of America. So from where we're standing as Arabs, we've seen the slippery slope. We've gone down, like, this is a slope. Like, if this was like at a theme park, we would have gone up and down this slope 70 times, right? Like, it's a water slide. Like, you go down faster than you could possibly imagine. We've seen it. So I get it. Like, censorship of art sounds really terrifying. You know what's more scary to me? The censorship of those people in Iraq.
Right.
Because they have their stories, right? They have their stories. They have the hurt. They have their deaths. People have died in their families. People have died in their city. They had to turn a soccer stadium into a cemetery because people were dying too fast. The ground is still irradiated with uranium-depleted rounds. People are dying. People are, like, being born sick from the radiation in the ground that is still there, right? Every person in that city has a story of loss, has a story of a building that was destroyed, has a story of a family house. Houses that might have been in the family for centuries, right? Of those destroyed. And they don't get to speak. They get to watch. They get to watch how a U.S. dude, U.S. white dude, sitting there with his nice video game money and his government contracts, which is how he's funding this game, right? How he gets to make a game telling these people sitting in the rubble of their own lives that really they got saved. That really it is better now. Right? That's censorship to me. People saying, like, yo, this thing is shit. That's not censorship to me. That's people telling some people, that's people telling those creators that this is not wanted.
Right.
That right. This is revisionism. That this should be, by all means, illegal to take people's deaths and rewrite it into a hero story. So for me, that comparison, it doesn't fly. The comparison of like censorship, let's look at censorship. Who's getting censored? Well, let's see. Is it the poor civilians in a city that's still irradiated trying to object to the way they're being represented by a game made halfway across the globe in the country that brought that invasion to them? Are they getting censored? Or is the dude who made a ton of money doing government contracts with the military, right, who gets to speak no matter what he wants? If this game gets canceled, he will be on talk shows. He will be in the news. He will be talked about for years as a martyr to free speech, right? As the guy that risked it all to bring out his art, right? He will be a hero. The people in Iraq, they got to shut the fuck up. That's it. That's the full extent of their part of this. And if they want to speak, they get to speak some nice things about the U.S. military. So we can put those videos in this video game, right? That's censorship to me. That's the censorship part of this whole situation. Like, the art part, I'm an artist. I believe in people saying what they want. I also believe that if you say stupid shit, that you should shut the fuck up.
Isn't that one of the taglines of our show? Don't we end our show like that a lot?
Yes,
like,
yes.
Well, you fit right in. With
yes. That was perfect. That was... God, I 100% agree. Yes, you know, showing people the door isn't censorship. And I've been, you know, just seeing the dialogue online with different, you know, media outlets about censorship and how I just feel like people don't know what that word means, because they liken it to people just saying, we don't like this game. We don't want to buy this game. We don't want to have any part of it. We don't even want to cover it because of how inflammatory it can be without having the right voices, and that automatically equals censorship. And I'm like, you don't know what censorship means. You really don't.
Right.
And I even with the slippery slope idea, the idea of like certain things can be censored or not, and people can say we don't want these, you know, this game to come about because of this reason or that reason. We have to look at the power structure of what that means and what that is. Do we have the power to stop this game from coming out? And ideally, no, we really don't. A lot of minorities don't have the power that you think we do. Outside of, you know, it took the entire world marching for one person, or, you know, for police brutality, for people to start being like, you know what?
Right.
This
is kind of bad. It took all of that. And even still, people are like, you know, Black Lives Matter is crap and all, you know what I mean? So like what we're saying or what we're, and not to kind of, you know, jump on your point and make it our point, but the idea is that in any of these situations where we have critique or we have a desire to express our pain about the subject matter, we aren't actually, you know, censoring. And even what we want to censor, we can't. We don't have that power. None of us can go and say, I mean, to even be more realistic, Konami didn't have the power because the person who, you know, the original developer, that guy made his new publishing company, Victora, who's now producing and publishing the game. So even Konami couldn't stop the game. They just delayed it. You know what I mean?
Right.
And so... Yeah, I just wanted to say that part.
Right. Yeah, no, I think this is a mistake I've made, because like this is obviously something that's very dear to me, right? This is the story of my life, is the story of Arabs being destroyed, is the story of Arabs in the Middle East being dehumanized. The realization that as a kid playing every game, I was only playing guys that looked like my Dutch friends, and I was only shooting guys that looked like my Arab friends. Like, that's a messed up realization to have when you're like a 13-year-old, 14-year-old kid, right?
Yeah.
The mistake I make is like, at some point I thought of these as separate issues, right? When what you said before, not to jump on my point. You're not jumping on my point. We're having the same point, right? We're in agreement. I made that mistake of thinking that when people talk about Black Lives Matter, that part of me was upset that it's not about Arab Lives Matter, right? Part of me was angry about that, because I feel like in the conversation, in the English conversation, the story of Black Lives Matter comes up more than the story of Arab Lives Matter. Here's the thing. Doesn't fucking matter. You're fighting the same fight, right? Yeah. You're fighting the exact same thing, which is these power structures that are unfair, that are destroying our people, you, your people, my people, but together, all people that are oppressed by the same systems, right? I made this mistake. I've made this mistake in public. I've had to learn from this mistake. It's one of my, honestly, one of my biggest regrets in my life is that I even once made anybody feel like this is not a shared fight, but a fight amongst each other. Because if we let ourselves be divided against these kind of things, we lose, right? Exactly. And that's how that keeps happening. That's how those stories keep happening.
Let me speak to that. And Tess, I want you to chime in because I feel like I've been talking over you a bit. I think that
I'm enjoying my break. I got, you know,
good. I got you gonna be talking on the next one. No, I saw, you know, the interchange, and there were moments where I was upset. There was moments where I was saddened, but there was something that I saw that I want to kind of speak to, because what you said is 100% right. And what I saw, like the Twitter exchange, I felt was wrong. And I actually spoke on that. But when you said that there was a point in your exchange where you said, it feels like, and I'm paraphrasing, but it was like, it feels like the only way to get people to understand my pain is to kind of compare to someone else's pain, right? And immediately when you said that, I stopped being angry, because I was like, if it got to that point, because a lot of times when we talk about these things and how people kind of say things, and maybe they said it the wrong way, or, you know, they kind of, you know, overstepped their bounds a little bit, we kind of fixate on just that. And what I found is that there's a lot of stuff that's not being said that actually is being said. And when you made that remark, I was like, yo, it has gotten so bad that someone felt that they had to compare tragedy to tragedy just to get you to listen about this particular tragedy. Yeah. And I was like, that, if that's the case, if that's what you're feeling, then we as U.S. citizens, regardless if we're black or not, we've kind of failed. Because at the same, you know, when we talk about these things, we all want to be heard. You know, we have the you know, Asian Americans and what they're going through right now with the shootings and everything, the violence, they want to be heard. Black people, we've always wanted to be heard. Oh my God. Right. And you know, Arab people as well. And so it's the idea that you had to, like, you felt desperate enough or felt that, you know what I mean?
Desperate is the right word. I was desperate because, like, again, you grow up, right? And your parents tell you, don't speak, be quiet. Because if you do speak, you will fuck up your life, right? You will stop every opportunity you have, because the opportunities you have in this life, a lot of them are in the US, no matter where in the world you are, right? I want to sell a video game, I have to work with the US. I can't go to GDC, I can't go to E3, I can't go to PAX, end of career, right? For a long time in my career, that's the case. I've been fortunate. I'm so fortunate that I was an indie in this industry, that I started my own company, that they didn't know how to deal with indies early on, that they thought that people that lead a successful indie studio are kind of like CEOs, right? And that I skipped all of the racism, all of the bullshit in the games industry, straight to being a CEO. I'm not a CEO, I'm an indie. I had a two-person studio. They just didn't know how to deal with it. So I got this platform in the industry. I got this reach in the industry that no people like me have ever had. No Arab has had that in the games industry, right? So I feel so much guilt and responsibility every time I shut up about something like this. Because who else gets to speak? Which Arab has the privilege of having run a successful game studio for 10 years, having been involved in how Microsoft does its indie program, Sony does its indie program, how Nintendo talks to indies, how Steam works with indies? Like, I've had all of these points, Apple, Android, all of these points of influence that I've had over the past 10 years, all of these points of connection, of community building that I've had over the 10 years, and then I'm going to be quiet? I can't be quiet. Mm-hmm. But it's also been 10 years. It's been 10 years of me fighting this fight. And I, I got desperate and I fucked up. Like, I'm not going to go any way around that. I fucked up. Right. No harm. No, there's no way that you can use the harm of a people as a rhetorical point.
Right.
Right.
I was desperate and it doesn't make it okay. Right. But I'm grateful that in that moment you saw the hurt and the humanity in me. And I don't blame anybody who doesn't, because I understand that if this is a harm that you've carried with you for all of your life, that you're not going to give anybody a pass on that shit. Right.
Yeah.
Right.
But I do appreciate that. And it means a lot to me, because it is probably, of all failures I've had in my life, like, the biggest failure is to take people that are my allies and that have been my allies in the games industry, right? Because the black folks in the US, around the world, they know racism. Oh God, they know racism. They live racism every day. They, you know, you all have seen the worst of that system because you live in that system. In the United States, where all of this is so extreme, where capitalism is so extreme, where policing is so extreme, and you fight. And you fight for everybody in that way, right? Because what I said before, if you all change the culture, then it changes for everybody.
Right.
That is not fair that is on you. That shouldn't be on you. It should be on the fucking white people who are not changing this shit. But, like, we know how much we can trust that to change anything at all, right?
Yeah. So,
right. Yeah. But that's the thing, like, throughout my career, whenever I ran into racism, it was always a black developer that, like, lifted me back up and told me, like, you can't give up. Like, you got to keep going, because this is how they get you down. This is how they stop your people from speaking, is by exhausting the last person who can speak, right? And it is, I mean, it is true, and it is bullshit that it has to work this way, that every Arab that enters the games industry, that every black person that enters the games industry, that every woman who enters the games industry, that they have to fight. On top of fighting for their career, they have to fight for their people, mm-hmm. right? For people like themselves, for people that look like them, that sound like them, that speak like them, that have a culture like them, a history like them. Like, that is not how it should be, but it is how it is, right? So for me to fail all of those people that have lifted me up through my career, that's the part. Like, I have this Twitter account of mine where this all went down, right? Mm-hmm. I don't love Twitter. I love my Twitter, though. I love my Twitter because it has given me so much perspective. It has given me so much insight. It has given me so much ability to try and do good, to make conversation happen about things that conversation wouldn't happen about.
Yeah.
I shut down my Twitter for a week. And that part of that was, like, trying to figure shit out. Part of that was trying to send apologies. I send apologies, personal apologies, to the people that I lost my shit at, right? The people that I mistreated, that the people that deserve better, right? I sent personal emails to every single one of them to apologize. I did the public apology. A part of that week was just shame. Part of that week was me realizing, like, just how much harm I had done, because they thought of me as ally, as somebody who stood next to them, and I turned it on them. That sucks to realize that in trying to speak, you harm people that shouldn't be harmed, right? That don't deserve more harm. And it's hard because, again, in speaking about these Arab issues, I don't have an example. I don't have anybody to look at what I can say, what I can't say. Right. I'm not even a native English speaker. I don't know this shit. I don't know what's happening in the US in detail. I don't know what is acceptable. I don't know what is not acceptable. I don't have somebody to look up at. It's been me. It's been just me. Like, I don't, there's a few other Arabs in the games industry. They don't have the platform I have. They don't have the reach I have. There's Muslims in the games industry. A lot of them keep quiet because they have visa issues. So I try to, you have high standards for yourself. And especially when you speak to diversity, especially when you speak to inclusivity, you have to. It's a responsibility to do good, to do the best you can. And nobody's perfect. And nobody will always get it right. But holy shit, was that a fuck up. Right? Like, holy shit, was that like, I look at that, and I'm just like, I see the anger and I see the hurt, but like, that was just, it was not okay. And I will, even when people see the humanity, like, I appreciate it. Like, I hope I can make up for that. I hope I can do better. And I've made changes to how I speak about things. I've made changes about how I consider things. And I hope that anybody that watched that, because I think that's one part of apologizing, is you don't just apologize for the harm. You also try to improve it structurally, right. Which is why my apology was public. My apology, part of the apology was like, if any Arabs are reading this, I understand you're frustrated. I understand you're angry at the US. I understand that you don't believe that you should have to distinguish between a white American and a black American when it comes to criticizing America, right? When it comes to criticizing the government, when it comes to criticizing the bombs, because for them, there is no distinction. But for me, as a public figure with that platform, there has to be a distinction. It can't be that simple, because there are people being hurt by that sort of rhetoric every day. And that's part of having a platform, right? It's part of getting to speak. It's part of getting to speak with the loudness of that account, of that reach, of that legacy in games. Is you can't do that. You can't throw people under the bus for any point you want to make. And I wanted to make sure that the others that were watching that they understood what I did wrong, right? That they understood where I fucked up. And I think. I believe, and I've had discussions with a lot of Arabs about it, who felt hurt, right? That somebody that speaks was silenced, and explained to them, I was not silenced. I was wrong, right? Mm. And I think those are healthy conversations to have, because for a lot of Arabs, they're coming into this. English is not their native language. They don't know the discussion of diversity. They don't know the stories of the U.S. They know as little about what happens in the U.S. as y'all know about what happens in, countries in the Middle East. Maybe a little more, because, we've all seen Friends and whatever. we've all watched Home Alone. This is one of my pet peeves. Like, everybody recognizes the fucking U.S. skylines. And nobody would recognize any other skyline. Like, what does the Cairo skyline looks like? It's like, shit, nobody knows. I don't even know. I'm Egyptian. I know one building, the Burj, and it's like this big tower. It's this metal tower, beautiful tower. But like, what buildings go where? I don't know. I could tell you. You show me a photo of New York, I'd be like, that building is on the wrong place.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure that's on the other side of the Empire State Building.
Yes.
Right. It is wild the amount of media that the US outputs and the amount of normalcy that comes from it. Right. Mm-hmm. The amount of assumption that comes from it. But that's not the point. The point is that I think it's important that if we are allies, and we are allies, right, against the same forces, against the same colonialism, about the same ripples from colonialism. The same exploitation, the same, then it's important that when we speak and things go wrong, that we resolve that, right?
Right.
I'm just grateful I got that chance to resolve that, and that people gave me the time of their day to listen to some asshole who told them that their harm was like really useful as a rhetorical device, and listen to me to let me apologize, right? It is humbling, and it is... I hope that it is a show that in my life I have done good for people, that they would give me that time. Because I know that if I was just the next random asshole on Twitter saying shit like that, that there was no way people would give me the time of day, right? Because I wouldn't deserve it. I think in a way that was very humbling, and it was very... I don't think nice is the right word, but
the opportunity perspective.
It was reassuring to get that opportunity. It was reassuring to like know that at heart people believe I am a good person that fucked up. Right.
Right.
You never know. You never know. With a platform like this, the amount of shit you get every day, like, you should know, like, my DMs, ever since I've been tweeting about 6 days in Fallujah, like, every link I get is like, you can flip a coin, whether it is a Rickroll or a decapitation video. Like, I don't know anymore. People are sending me the most awful shit. Like, I'm getting, like, decapitations. I'm getting slurs. I'm getting, like, some photos of me photoshopped onto videos of decapitation. I'm, like, getting some... Oh, it is fucked up shit.
The Rickrolling part's okay. We can walk
right.
It goes all day long. Never
right. Yeah. At this point,
like, that's fine.
Yeah. No, the other shit, not that great. And having to flip a coin every time I get a link, whether this is like a developer that is sending me a video of their video game and I should check it out, or like I'm going to be watching some people die. Like, I not great. Like, I'm getting like mutilated like corpses from the Iraq War. I'm like, getting bombed buildings, destroyed buildings. I'm like, this could be you next. Like, it's like a wish list, like a wish card. It's they photoshopped it like diagonal and everything. Like, you know, this stuff, it's part of it. It's part of like speaking out. It's part about speaking out against a military entertainment complex that people believe so true, because if it isn't true, then they're the bad guys. Nobody wants to be the bad guys.
No, that's
so I have to be the bad guy.
I mean, that's all across the board. That's anything everywhere. That's criticizing the power structure. It didn't have to be a video game. The fact that when Star Wars, the new trilogy was starting, the idea that a black person could be a stormtrooper sent people like was so bad that Disney like took his character and made it worse than what it was. Like they took out a lot of his stuff because not to address that he was getting harassed, but just to be like, let's appease these people. And it's like, wow, like this is horrible. People
Wait, so the thing that happens when we get racism is y'all just take it out of there? Like, you just take our representation away because you get less racism? I thought the other thing would happen, you know, where you're like, tell them to fuck off and like put that guy on the main poster for the next thing, four times as big as anybody else. That's kind of what I hoped would happen.
Yes, yes. So yeah, it's rough. Right. It is really rough. And I feel for you, you know, I mean, having to deal with that, having to, you know, the same with everybody, you know, people of color, having to deal with that, especially on a platform that doesn't really care.
They so don't care. About the maximum don't care.
Right.
Facebook, you know, all these platforms just did not care.
I mean, I guess they care. It's engagement, right? Like every DM send and read, like that's some good marketing numbers. Like if we send that to some good big companies with a lot of money, every DM counts, you know? Like, we don't know what's in there, but like all these tweets getting responses, that's great. Look at all this engagement we're getting. Like it's the entire system is broken.
Yes.
Right. From top down all the way to the bottom, like from like racism, sexism, capitalism, like all of these systems. All of these things have like gone to the point where it's somehow worse in many ways than it was like 10 years ago. I have no idea how this happened. It's like this backswing. It's like people were like, We'll give them a breadcrumb. And then at some point they realize like, shit, they got a lot of breadcrumbs. We're going to get some of these breadcrumbs back because like these people are going to get actual power if we continue this instead of like some symbolism, right?
Well, what had happened was this guy, his name was Barack Obama. He became president and that scared a lot of people.
Right.
So then a bunch of things happened and then it was like, whoa, wait a minute. I thought progress and then...
For me watching that, it was like people going like, no, he's a Muslim. I'm like, what's wrong with that? What are you trying to say? What is the issue? Like, I'm just sitting here and be like, wait, so the worst thing you could say about this, like, he's black and he's Muslim.
And he wore a tan suit.
Right. Oh yeah, that was unacceptable. Like okay. let's like the like Trump literally like saying he could shoot some people somewhere in the street and like you know what? That's presidential. That was the moment he became presidential.
The tan suit,
that was fucked up. Unacceptable.
Yeah. Oh my god.
And he was Muslim, by the way. You heard?
Yes.
Muslim came into church.
Right.
so he was cool.
Just the fact that was like That was like it felt like a ranking. It's like you got Christian at the top. That's acceptable. Like we will run our country based on that. Like, got to bring a Bible to like the swearing in.
Yes.
Like, you know, like good Christian values. Like, talk about Jesus all day. And then like this guy, he's like far down the list at like the Muslim part. Like, that's how you know this guy's evil. Like,
yeah, it's.
I was watching that from where he's like. I remember me and my dad's being like, did they just say we're bad? They said we're bad, right? Yeah, they said we're bad. Okay.
That's rough.
We were so shocked. We were, excuse me. Yeah, man. It was what? That. But like, that's it. It's the backswing, right? We're on the backswing. The backswing, like, this happens because over the years, people have fought so hard that now we're an actual threat.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
We're a threat to this idea that the people that are keeping us down, the people that are oppressing us, we're now a threat to the idea that they're superior. And it keeps falling apart. It keeps getting worse. Because in their responses, they're showing that they're worse. In many ways, they're worse. Like, the way they treat people is worse. The way they oppress people is worse. Like, there is really no way for any person to look at the situation. If humanity ends right now, if like some gamma ray bursts, like just destroys all life on the planet, and like some alien species in like 5 million years finds this planet and they start, you know, digging up stuff and they start reading through it, the first thing they're going to realize is like, all of these white folks that were keeping this system in place, that were defending this system, that were like not fighting to make this better, they were kind of assholes.
Right.
That's the first thing that's going to happen.
Right.
The second thing that's going to happen is like, they had this weird thing called a Twitter. We don't know what it is. People posted videos of these strange creatures with four legs and these hairs on their nose. And they would say like, if we're sad, you should send me animated pictures of these. But then also just white supremacist bullshit. And we don't understand how that happened, but apparently this thing called money was involved.
Yeah,
this. I haven't figured it out yet. There was also this thing where they sold some of these images for fake money, like made with electricity. Haven't figured that out either. But like, apparently all of this shit happened because money and supremacy.
And then one of the monies, the fake monies, had a picture of that furry thing on it.
Right.
Big eyes. And then right. That happened.
Yeah, that happened. Like, when aliens find this world frozen in time exactly now, they're just going to be like, this species was probably not ready for like shit like this. Because
they're going to be disappointed.
they're going to be like, these people existed for tens of thousands of years. But look at the shit that they were up to.
Yeah.
Like, like, how is this shit possible? It's gonna be such a weird research paper.
Well, I'm not gonna hold you too much longer. We actually kept you longer than we had planned.
Yeah.
So this is actually going to turn into our own special podcast. So we're gonna be doing two this week. Okay. But no, this was great though. I really I didn't have too many questions. I kind of just wanted you to, or I should say we, just kind of wanted you to speak as much as possible because I feel like everyone else is speaking and you guys don't get to speak. So I definitely wanted to hear that. And you have you brought up a lot of great points and some things that I recognize and then even some things that I didn't. And so this was awesome. I super appreciate you taking the time out to talk with us, to hang out and just kind of express how you feel.
I really appreciate that, and thank you for making this a place where I could speak about these things, because as I said, like, it's so easy to just not have anybody speak on this, right? It's so much easier than finding a way to get somebody to speak on this. So shukran, right?
Yes.
Like, thank you. Thank you for having me. Thank you for letting me speak about this. Thank you for being wonderful hosts. I really appreciate it.
Honestly, this was awesome. I really enjoyed having you. I enjoyed meeting you, Rami. This was great. And honestly, one of the reasons why I was kind of happy to just sit back and really not
speak that much. I really, really enjoyed what you were saying, and I agreed with so much of what you were saying. I didn't have anything else to say. Like, it was one of those things. Of, how did that make you feel? I just was like, mm-hmm. Yes.
I mean, so many questions that he was hitting all the points, and I was like, I don't even need this list anymore. Just toss this aside.
Turns out we've been long ready to talk about these things.
Right, exactly.
So we've learned what to speak about and what right. not to speak about and how to speak about things. But to get the chance to do it this way, not happened before in my life, I think. So this awesome. This is awesome, and I really appreciate it.
That's dope. So
dinner.
So this is this is a Gamecast first. Everyone, thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us. We appreciate your time as well. Hopefully you learned something new. Hopefully you will give what we've been saying a thought. You know, take some time to think about it and to try to understand another person's point of view. Try to understand where we're coming from when we talk about these things, because they're important to us. And I understand kind of how it might not be important to you because you've been living your life on the opposite end for so long that seeing someone kind of, you know, bump up against what seems natural to you might feel whatever. What I'm trying to say is I hope you understand and hope you want to listen and hope you want to learn. If you feel a way about what we had to say today, if you don't want to learn, if you want to troll, if you want to do any of those things, yeah, fuck you. Okay. Everyone else, hopefully you got something out of this interview. Hopefully you got a little bit more understanding of why this particular game is going to be problematic, or at least why we believe it's going to be problematic, and that you will give other people who might not have a voice a chance to express themselves without saying that they're censoring or all the other BS reasons that people get censored, right? With that being said, feel free to all the things that you should do. Subscribe, notification bell, all that good stuff. We're going to be landing on multiple DSPs pretty soon. Actually, I want to say in April. We should be, so you're going to see us on Spotify, iTunes, all those places, not just on YouTube. But until then, feel free to subscribe so you know when all the new content is coming out. Like I said, this week we're doing two podcasts. So, yeah. You want to stay tuned for all the good stuff that we have coming up. Again, we want to thank our special guest, Rami, for stopping by and chatting with us for almost 2 hours. And with that said, that is all I have for housekeeping. Tess, it is on you.
Everybody, thank you once again for joining us. I tell you the same thing every week. Don't be a dick. Wash your hands, wash your face, wash your butts. Wear your mask. You know, we don't do COVID around here these parts. So
yes.
That's pretty much it. Again, thank you, Rami, for joining us. This was amazing. I really hope that we can have you on again. I just want to keep the discussion going. We do have these topics every once in a while, almost. I mean, obviously, you know, our show is from the blurred perspective anyway. So we do bring this up a lot. And I just think it's important. I want people to understand how important it means to be an ally and how we really are allies in this. So remember that we're allies here. And it's really, really important that we support each other in the struggle. And we all know what it is. Okay. So with that, I'm just going to tell you guys what I say every week. We love you. Take care of yourselves. And bye-bye.